the paper that I had, the call and all the calls.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday. It is the last day of our broadcast week. For those of you who may be listeners from time to time, we've been broadcasting 3 nights a week now since December, and today is Wednesday, the 23rd of February in the year 2005. Alan Watt is with us tonight, and I'm glad you've joined us, folks. I want to begin here with our spiritual message. Alan came on with us last night at about, 10 after, 12 after the hour, and we got into a conversation just at the end of that hour that was very intriguing. So I asked him to please come back this evening so that we could pick it up where we left off, and we're going to do that. Our spiritual message this evening is from John, and this would be John 13. I'm sorry. Give me a second here. No, it isn't. It is, I'm sorry, folks, it's John 12. And this begins with verse 44. Jesus cried and said, "He that believes on me believes not on me, but on him that sent me. And he that sees me sees him that sent me. I am come a light into the world, that whosoever believe on me should not abide in darkness. And he also said, if any man hear my words and believe not, I judge him not, for I came not to judge the world, but to save the world." He also said in John 18 that he came into this world to bear witness unto the truth. But Alan, thanks for being with us tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
You're so nice and clear there. What occurred to me as I was reading this is that many people take this literally and say, well, that proves that Jesus was God, because he said that when a man sees me, that he sees him who sent me. And would you comment on that, please?
Well, he's talking about a different deity. He's talking about the Creator, as opposed to the man-made lawgiver, you know.
Yes, and the fact that he said, when you see me, you see the Father, or you see him who sent me.
Yeah.
To me, the interpretation that, well, that proves that he was saying, I am God, I believe what he was saying here is that I am representative of that which is true and that which is light, etc. He who sent me has given me these words.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he also said that the Father was in him, and that those who understood him, if you like, who tuned into the same wavelength, then he was also in them. And so it was a raising of consciousness as well to truth, as you say.
Yes.
In an era where their whole lives up until then had been run by tyrannical laws and lawgivers. And he's giving the truth out, you see.
Right, the Pharisaical doctrine, and is that what you mean?
Yeah, there were so many laws that you couldn't help but break a few before you got out of your house in the morning.
And then you got to be a sinner.
Oh, yeah, and of course, as long as you paid money for something to be sacrificed, then it was okay.
Uh-huh.
So it was a good cash-going business.
We are going to get back to what we were talking about last night, what you were talking about, but you had made a statement, doggone it. Sometimes my thoughts are so fleeting, Alan. I'm going to have to let that go because it was there and then it's gone. Last night, we were talking about the name of, quote, God of the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Old Testament, of course, he said, you know, to his chosen people that, when I made my covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they knew me only as Lord God Almighty. But I am going to take you to be my people. I will be to you a God and in my name, or you will know me as Jehovah. And what I mentioned last night is what I get letters from people and emails and say his name was Yahweh. And so in other words, that evidently the difference in the name, it takes away from everything that this God, quote, Jehovah of the Old Testament did and said. But what you mentioned is the fact that the belief was that if you had the name of the God, how did you express that, Alan?
It was traditional in the entire Middle East that if you had the name of a god, a demon, or a genie. For instance, the genie in the bottle, then you had the power over that entity to command that entity. And that was the little game, supposedly, that Moses was playing with the deity when he appeared as a burning bush. And it's all allegory, you see. But he wanted to know the deity's name so that he could have control over the deity.
I see.
And so the deity answered, I am that I am. That's all he would say at that particular point. The Jehovah or Yahweh thing came in much later.
Did it?
Yeah. And of course, it's nothing to do with an actual single entity as such, except in a very obscure form. Because it does see the deity that they worshipped initially was the volcano god. The volcano.
Did he have a name?
The Greeks called it Volcanos.
Okay.
And of course that's
Be Vulcan?
Mr. Spock, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pure logic, you see. And of course if you came down a mountain, you wouldn't be surprised to see bushes burning if it was a volcano. And of course, that's why they said that they were led by a pillar of smoke by day and fire by night. It was a volcano, you see. And it was a much earlier story that they'd adopted into, that the priests had adopted into this.
But that doesn't really make sense that they were led by a volcano, because the volcano is there static, and supposedly they
What it means is they were led by a pillar of smoke. In other words, all they saw was a pillar of smoke. That was their landmark.
Oh, a landmark.
And
oh, the fire by night and the smoke by day.
That's what it means.
And that's what they were. They like the three wise guys following the star.
That's the same thing. Yeah.
I see.
So it's mystical language which paints a picture. If it's instilled early enough in a child's mind, they will always remember that exoteric picture, which seems real to them, and they'll never figure out the esoteric story behind it.
Uh-huh.
So it's a clever technique, which was deliberate. You know, language and the way it's used is very deliberate in these instances. But so anyway, he started off as the volcano god. And he is also known, as in the Old Testament, as the God of Thunder. Volcano is also boom and bang, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's also associated with the thunder. So he was the sky god.
And Thor, wasn't Thor the god of thunder?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, see, all these ancient religions were connected at one time.
Uh-huh.
And what they said was eventually that the God was in command of the earth, everything on the earth, all the species that walked the earth, the air itself, and the rain that fell. And so that's where they came with earth, fire, wind, and water.
Earth, air, fire, and water, you
yeah.
said.
And what that also means, it's opposites, because behind the religion, there's an esoteric religion. Behind the story form that you're told.
Okay.
And it comes down through all Freemasonry and all religions, even Hinduism has it incorporated into it, that the world is run by opposites opposing forces. And so the simplest form is your seasons. You have your summer and your winter, your fall and your spring. And so they also say that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And then if you delve back into the religion of the Babylonians, where all this stemmed from, and Egypt, and the Greeks, in fact, they believed that there had to be a balance always between the forces of this or that, not necessarily good or evil, because those are subjective terms according to the appropriation of it. So if it was out of balance one way, things could never be placid in the world, and therefore they always had to keep this balance, if you might say, between authority and freedom. The very same thing we're hearing from the Bush administration today.
Like what?
How much freedom are you willing to give up for security? It's a balance, you see. And if you read the books that many of the elite have written, and the planners have written themselves, like those of Bertrand Russell, they go through this whole process of saying, and they knew their history since they were historians and philosophers. They said the problem the elite have always had was deciding how much freedom to give the general common people and maintain authority over them at the same time. And of course, as they came up towards the 20th century, they got more in detail with the fact they'd have to lose freedoms for the masses, and the masses would definitely need more control over them. As it came into this technological society, and then for the 21st century it was to be a century of increasing encroachment of bureaucracies to cover every facet of life and living for
that's,
the general
yeah,
common
yeah that's
people.
Right out of the Talmud, isn't it?
It's Talmudic too, because
well,
the Talmud is just a book of the same stuff, you know.
Well, that's what the thought that I lost there for a minute mm-hmm. is that I recall you saying that the Talmudic laws
mm-hmm.
actually, if you really read it all mm-hmm. or get into it, when they say that they intend to have dominion, total dominion over this physical world, including
mm-hmm.
The inhabitants herein, that even the most personal functions, let's say, of the body, etc., they have laws governing it.
Yeah.
And you did say that, yes?
Well, I don't know if I said it, but I know it's true.
Oh, okay, well,
Yeah, all these laws of hygiene.
That's right.
Laws of virginity, laws of pre-marriage examinations for virginity, and so on and so on, you know. So that, yeah, I mean, everything is law, is legalized, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And of course, when you probably heard in many of the Masonic, or read many Masonic books, they talk about as above, so below.
Yes.
Well, thousands of years ago, when they gave birth to the great plan or the great work, they used the stars and drew their plan, you might say, into the stars. And, of course, each constellation has a period of rulership, as they say. So these were time periods as each constellation took its lead to rule. And they worked out what would be done during those 2,000-odd year periods. And for the time of Jesus, the fish, the Pisces, and that was the earliest symbol of Christianity, was the fish. Wherever they went in Europe, these monks always drew in stone the fish, and that was a symbol that they'd been there. So they were the age of Pisces, and that's why Jesus says, "I'll make you a fisher of men." You see, it's all allegory of a plan, you might say. And
what did he mean when he said that, or do you think that was something they said he said?
No, it was a pre-existing religion which everyone knew. It was it was partly Gnostic, which pre-existed that period and coexisted with it. The Greeks talked about it. Plato talked about the fishermen of men. These would be people who were specially trained in the mysteries, who would be sent out to gain discipleship, and who would then spread this technique, and which was actually to end up ruling the world in a perfect system. They believed that these disciples would pick leaders as children, train them to be kings, philosopher kings. And in fact, Alexander the Great was trained by Aristotle, who was a pupil of Plato. Plato was a pupil of Socrates, who had to drink the hemlock as a punishment for trying to corrupt the youth. So they were using the youth, training them to go out into the world and create revolution. And so Alexander the Great was trained by Aristotle for the role that he was to take. So these were called the fisher kings. That's what the term means.
And does that have anything to do with the mitre that the Pope wears?
Yes, it does too. Oannes was a fish god, as they say.
Who was that?
Oannes. Oannes was the name of that deity.
All right.
But anyway, the fisher king was a principle where they would literally bring up a youth for a leadership role, indoctrinate him in philosophy and logic, and his role would be to lead the world into the perfect republic, as Plato called it, which was a world which would be run by a guardian class. The guardian class were to be the elite aristocracies of the world. And below them, they would have the helping class, which would be the armies and the militaries, eventually incorporating females into those militaries. And they hoped to then breed the female soldiers with the male soldiers, and they would become, their offspring would obviously take the same roles. And below them, there were the working classes, who would be specially bred for the tasks that they had to perform through selective breeding. So if you wanted an apple picker, as Plato said, you would pick a tall, thin guy and breed him with a tall, thin female. If you want a miner, you breed a small, squat guy with a small, squat woman. And this was planned or talked about 2,400 years ago. And so anyway, they sent out these fisher kings to create revolution, and also each revolution was to create a larger and larger empire, and ultimately they would end up with world empire. That was the whole agenda. And of course, Plato himself had been taught in Egypt, as all the aristocracy of Greece was. They were taught the mystery religions in Egypt, but everything that came out of Egypt always led to revolution in those countries that those students then went back to.
Wow.
So that's the key to it. And of course, revolution is a circle, you see. To revolve is to draw a circle. And that's why they use the word revolution. That's why the term revelation is just a vowel away from revolution. It's just the alteration of a vowel, you know. And so anyway, this was planned a long, long time ago. Jehovah, which basically is the balancing of opposites. And if you've got a bit of paper there, I can show you how to draw it.
I'm taking notes right now.
Okay, you
have the
draw
pen in my hand.
You draw the letter X.
Okay.
Okay. And on the bottom right-hand side, put down yod or yay, you know.
Okay, how do I spell that?
You can spell it any way you want because that's why they left the vowels out of those. There was no vowels, in fact, in the early Hebrew.
Oh, okay, that would be the Y for Yahweh?
Yeah.
Yahweh?
Yeah.
Okay, and the bottom right-hand corner, yad.
Put on yod, and then next to that you put down fire.
Okay.
And then you follow that line up to the top left, and you put hay, and next to that you put air. Then you go to the next line, top right, and you put hay, which is water.
Well, how can hay be water and air?
No, it's... sorry, hold on. Yeah, V is there. Yeah. So put a V for air.
A V.
Yeah.
Oh, they.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then for the water, you put H. You can say H-E-Y if you want. Yeah. And then follow that down to the bottom left, and you've got Va, which is earth.
Well, Yahweh, I thought, was Y-H-V-H. Yahweh.
Yahweh, yeah.
So we have right now Y-V-V-H.
You got Y, and then you've got H, then you've got the V.
For air.
Yeah, and a W, which is a V again, isn't it? Yeah, because they pronounce it V. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what it's showing you is the opposites. Fire is opposite air, you see,
uh-huh.
And water is opposite earth. Water is a feminine symbol. Earth again is a feminine symbol. So it's all to do with basically the balance of nature, you might say, and the control of nature.
So,
and even the name wasn't allowed to be pronounced except once a year by the high priest on pain of death, you know. And all the rest of the time, they could call the deity Adonai, but they were not allowed to use that word.
Did they know that this was all allegory, or did they?
No, the general public wouldn't.
No. But you okay? When you said that the name was only, they were only allowed to say the name once a year.
Yeah.
That would have been the general public.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I see.
So the high priest, even they didn't say it in public except on that one day of the year at some big service. But the general public wouldn't know what the inner meanings were. Just like you accept the name as Jesus, and you don't say, what does it mean?
But the insiders, the priests.
Oh, yeah.
They knew that it was allegory. In other words, did they know that Jehovah or Yahweh was an allegory, and that it was not an quote God, it was not an entity.
That's right.
Or a spiritual being, but it was just an allegory. So in other words, it kind of comes back to the fact that the religion had everything to do with this physical world and nothing to do with the spiritual or the here, the dimensions, let's say, beyond the third dimension.
No, and in fact, in the early Old Testament, you'll see that there's nothing spiritual in it, really.
No, there isn't. You're right.
There's no afterlife. You're dead. You go and lay with your father, and that's the end of it. the whole goal was to obtain wealth and happiness in this life.
That's right, and I do recall, because I really paid attention to it when Jehovah was handing down the mandate, if you would, that if you do my statutes, mm-hmm. you will be blessed.
Yeah.
And then he gave all the blessings. Well, all the blessings were earthly, you know, it was wealth and all everything earthly. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, if you didn't follow the statutes, was well, then the curses were just unbelievable.
Yeah.
It went on for a page and a half, including cannibalism, that parents would eat their own children.
Yeah.
Those were the curses. But I recall nothing
mm-hmm.
That was ever said about, you know, for example, when Jesus said, store up not your treasures here on earth.
Yeah.
Because where your treasure is where, what did he say, your heart is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
That's right. And so really, any idea of any spiritual nature was a much later addition to it, basically for Hebrewism. And even then, at the time of Jesus, there were many debates about even that, because the Sadducees, in fact, the main difference with the Sadducees, apart from the fact that they were the nobility, they were the aristocracy that came out of Babylon with the Pharisees. The Sadducees did not believe in an afterlife. That was how they differed from the Pharisees.
Why in the Old Testament, because I don't have it memorized, of course, or anything, but I just don't recall Jesus mentioning the Sadducees, but it was the Pharisees
mm-hmm.
that were getting his wrath. And
yeah, because they'd taken, I mean, they were the religious rulers, you might say, and they were becoming more aggressive for power, you know, more determined to get power for themselves. But because they also had an inner religion for themselves, they were a brotherhood, you see.
The Pharisees?
Yeah.
And the Sadducees, too?
Yeah, they still had their differences, though.
Uh-huh.
A power struggle.
Uh-huh.
You find that the Pharisees were definitely looking for to take over the reins of complete power. And they also believed that no one could really know the Creator deity. That's what they believed, that no one could know. They could say, through debating and logic, what the Creator was not, but they could not say what the Creator was. That's how they...
So they actually believed in a Creator?
They believed there was a Creator, but it was remote. But it was remote.
Not within us.
Not within us.
Not in this physical world at all, or...?
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they did believe that they had a duty to because Judaism is an active religion. It's not passive. And any rabbi will tell you, it's in a lot of their books, you know. It works towards a goal. So the purpose of Judaism is to work a goal into the world and to complete a mission, you might say. And, of course, the mission ultimately is a global governance under God's rule. And that's when the Creator will come back, they claim.
So they do speak of a Creator, but the quote, Creator is not present.
That's basically it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they were left with was a lot of rules and laws and regulations, but within their own religion, a mystery religion to do with the great work of working towards this particular goal, could they bring everything they claim into balance, and magically, yeah, I guess the Creator just pops back and says, "Well done." Yeah.
Would that be Lucifer? Do they believe that? We have to take a break.
Yeah.
Will you remember that question?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back, folks. And please stay with us. Alan Watt is our guest this evening. Get your pen in hand, please, if you would like to take my address. And help the sponsors of broadcast.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Okay, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Was I very late, Alan?
About 15 seconds.
I wish you would have just started talking. I'm sorry. I had to leave the room. I should have said that. So when they say that the Creator is coming back, mm-hmm. are they talking about Lucifer?
Well, that's it. Albert Pike himself, who was called the Pope of Freemasonry, which is one of the esoteric sects, using all the rites supposedly of Judaism, but they actually go through Judaism all the way to Babylon and Egypt. He said himself that, make no mistake, that our God is Lucifer.
Uh-huh.
He is the light bringer, and of course they equate the intellect and intelligence with light.
Right.
You know.
And Jesus was talking about light as spiritual. Right. Yes.
Yeah, it's almost the same thing.
The truth, uh-huh.
It's truth, and so that's how easy it is for two people to say the same thing, but both mean different things, you know.
Uh-huh.
The truth that Jesus was saying was basically the individual could literally, through austere practices, you might say, and truthfulness with themselves, connect themselves to the Creator.
Become aware of the connection.
Yeah.
Consciously aware of our oneness with our Creator.
And also that you didn't need any intermediary, any priest between you and the Creator, which of course would have destroyed the whole control system.
What do you think would have, how it would have turned out? Because it's very difficult for me to be able to imagine this, but if the Old Testament had not been connected to the, quote, New Testament, the Gospels, etc., the confusion wouldn't be quite as great.
It wouldn't have been quite as great. However, we must remember that Christianity from Constantine onwards was basically warped and twisted into the same religion for control purposes. Constantine did not make Christianity the main religion of his day. That's a fable. What he did was stopped all the persecution against Christians. He allowed, having an empire, he had many religions underneath him, and he himself was a member of them all because he took out insurance policies in every sect that there was. And after 325, a few years later, he actually erected a temple to himself as a son of Mithra, Mithraism, and also allowed himself to be worshipped as a god, you see. So he's a shrewd guy, he's a politician.
Oh, yes.
And the whole idea was to bring this new up-and-coming religion that grabbed the minds of many common people.
Exactly, and combining them. Like in the Mystery Babylon Religion, it explains how the gods of old, gods and goddesses, under Christianity, under the church, the Catholic Church, became the saints.
Yes, that's right. That's right. It was the same ones that the pagans could understand because they'd been worshipping the same deities forever. And so, you know, Hermes became St. Christopher and so on.
And so when people are praying to the saints, thank you, honey, they're praying to the gods of old?
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same thing. It's psychologically, it can give you a certain boost if you believe in it.
Yes.
And it makes you feel a bit indestructible, or you're getting a hand from somewhere. But, this was traditional. I mean, these people remember that the Romans inherited their empire from much older empires, the Greeks and the Egyptians. So they'd had thousands of years of watching new religions begin, taking them over, and using them for their own purposes. They never let anything become independent of its own, which would become a problem to the state.
I recall in the book, Mystery Babylon Religion, this, by the way, Alan, even though I knew that there were many discrepancies and et cetera in the Bible, I've come a long way since then, of course. Many of us have, but I was in shock as I was reading Mystery Babylon Religion. It was written by Ralph Woodrow, I believe his name was, and most of the information was taken from, what was his name that wrote The Two Babylons?
Oh, Hyslop.
Hyslop, thank you. But I remember Isis, the Queen of Heaven.
Yeah.
And the way that they pictured Isis is exactly the way Mary is pictured as the Queen of Heaven.
Well, she always will be.
Yes.
Always was.
And then...
That's the secret of the Sphinx. That is the secret of the Sphinx.
What is?
Okay, the Sphinx has the face of a woman and the body of a lion, because the solar year, or the great year in astronomy, leads off with Virgo the Virgin and ends with Leo the Lion. That's the whole plan in a circle. That's what the Sphinx stands for. And the Egyptian year began with Virgo, ends with Leo the Lion, the procession of the equinoxes.
But what has that got to do with Mary and Isis?
Because it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Mary is mother. It's Mary is also the sea in Latin. Water, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The great mother. When the anglicized it, in fact, once you put it into German, you've got, it's more like matter. Motor, which means matter, really. So she produces matter, the world of matter, mother. That's why you have Mother Earth, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's from Mary. It's the same thing.
And you know, the thing is, when you think about it, Alan, it's so close that it almost merges. I saw it at one time. I was trying to explain to Chuck that the way I was seeing it, and I said it's like a razor's edge, the truth.
Yeah.
And the lie is so close.
Yeah.
And then somebody said that it was actually, in a sense, merging, melding, and to where there wasn't really an edge at all. And when we think about it and realize that in the physical world there is a consciousness in all things, and so that... The book that really fascinated me was the Secret Life of Plants, and I've had my own experiences with plants, and realized that they certainly respond. They do respond, not just to watering, but to care, to love. And it isn't like people who accept and recognize the consciousness, they call them tree huggers, I guess, or, you know, God is in a tree, but that creative substance within all that is here in the physical world, that the earth itself would have a form of consciousness of type. I'm talking about awareness or, well, like a plant. The experiments that they have done with plants,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, if a plant has been in a room where another plant has been torn up by somebody, mm-hmm. when that plant walks, that person walks into the room,
yeah.
the plant that was there actually registers on their diodes, their instruments, registers some type of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a consciousness there. Of a very low form of consciousness, maybe, but the point I'm making is that it doesn't mean that you worship it. You just accept and understand that that creative substance, that energy or spark or whatever we would call it, is within all things.
Yeah, well, that was, the Gnostic concept that pre-existed Jesus and was also parallel with the time of Jesus. In fact, many of the Gnostics complained to Constantine that he was stealing their religion that had always been there, you know. And uh-huh. they claimed that the real Jesus, of course, in Gnosticism, could not be killed because he was pure spirit, and that he was not born of a woman because he was pure spirit, in fact. So there was a tremendous debate in 325 as to decide as to whether Jesus was pure spirit or was he spirit inside matter that had been born here.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they literally debated all of this.
Uh-huh.
And of course, all the Gnostic guys who came up were basically assassinated at the time of the meeting. You know.
Would Arius have been one of them in a sense?
Bishop
Arius?
Yeah, he was one of many of
uh-huh.
them.
Uh-huh. Because, and, you know, according to Will Durand, in his fourth volume, Jesus and Caesar,
mm-hmm.
or whatever the title of that is, it's close, he said that by the 6th century B.C., if a church was not of the Arius teachings, the church was literally empty. So, whether that was true or not, that was, you know, the way it was presented.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that allegedly after the council of Nicaea, that first
yeah.
council, that many of them who had voted said, okay, we'll agree this will be the doctrine of the church. This will mm-hmm. be the belief, and anybody that doesn't believe it is anathematized.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And that many of them rescinded their agreeance to that later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know if there's, have you read anything that confirms that or...
Oh yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that this was to be not just a state religion; it was to be the empire's religion, because they themselves knew that they had so many countries under the Roman Empire with so many religions that and since they were a secret brotherhood working to work towards a bigger empire of the future, they knew that they couldn't allow so many religions to exist. So they decided to basically create the one, and they did a lot of alteration because they had to stamp out the possibility of the Gnostic religion taking over.
The awareness that we are spiritual beings.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, because right from the word go, the bishops of Rome were taking upon themselves the powers, basically, or God's representative on earth.
I see, like the Pope does.
And that came later when they took absolute power and became God's authority on earth.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't have had all. You see, the Catholic Church itself was a continuation of rulership.
Yeah.
And from an empire that had existed for a long time, which had taken over from a previous empire which had lasted much longer, so they knew what they were doing. They knew that religion had to be used always as a tool to control the minds of the public. If the public were free from all this mind control, they wouldn't be working happily as slaves, you might say, to keep a small elite in power. They wouldn't be happy with that.
Yes.
And in fact, if they followed the teachings of Jesus, they'd have no money in circulation. And if you can't have money in circulation, you can't tax it back from the public, you know.
Yeah.
So they had to... That's why the Catholic Church, although they made a big to-do about usury, that they wouldn't allow usury, they made an exception for these Jewish bankers.
Yeah.
Well, why would they do that? Unless they were in cahoots from the very
beginning. Exactly, exactly.
And what you'll find, it was simply a continuation of what had already gone on before.
Yeah. I had a call from a listener after the broadcast a couple nights ago, or maybe, I don't know. But anyway, he was talking about a broadcast that is on the air once a week, and I do not recall the name of the person, but that what he's saying is that everybody who's, quote, blaming the Jews for everything have got it all wrong because it's the Jesuits. And my understanding is that all of it, the church, the Catholic Church, the Jesuits, Illuminati, Freemasonry, it's all part of the same controlling factor.
It's, they're all faces of the same thing.
All faces of the same thing.
You see, that's what they always couched it in Babylon and Egypt. They said that ISIS, because they always refer, these brotherhoods refer to their to the mother more than the father, and amongst themselves.
Uh-huh.
But they said ISIS had a thousand faces. And that's what they mean by that.
Uh-huh.
That every church you can look at, whether it's Muslim, Catholic, Protestant, whatever, or even the temples to Shinto, you would see the same hidden architecture, not so hidden actually, in them all. And that's the big secret, of course. They always put, because they are the builders of society as well as the builders of the buildings. And they put the society, the structure of society, in the architecture itself. And they also give you all the symbology of the inner religion and all of the temples that they give the public. So things are always hidden out there in plain sight.
Hidden, the truth is hidden in plain sight, yeah.
In fact, there was a man recently came out in Manitoba, who's at the University of Manitoba, who's done a 4-year study on the government main parliament building there. For the province, which
in
is a state,
Canada there.
Yeah, and he his speciality is studying old Judean structures, architecture, and so on. And after studying the parliament building for the province, which is the government building, he's come to the conclusion, and he's got it all worked out perfectly. They used the Egyptian cubit, the sacred cubit, to build this thing right down to the last fraction of an inch.
Oh my.
They have all the symbols of the outer portico temple and the inner temple in there. I mean, the whole structure is a Masonic temple. And the big joke, of course, which we've always known, is that all parliament buildings are Masonic temples. All churches are Masonic temples. As Pike said himself, everyone who's been trained in this system is simply a Mason who hasn't gone through the degrees. We've all been trained through their school system. We've all gone to their churches, regardless of what country we're in. And we're all pre-Masonic, you might say, because we've gone through rituals without even knowing it. When you walk through that oval door into the church, you've walked through the female. That's what it means.
Yeah.
The spire is the phallus, the box is the female, and the opening is the female. It's the mystery religion. We live it. We go through it every day, and most people don't even know it.
Of course we wouldn't know it.
Yeah. So that's the big secret. ISIS has a thousand faces.
Yeah. I would like to go back. I made a note here when you said revolution completes a circle, and what it means is revolve. Would you expand on that? Because I'm not getting it.
That's why they used the term revelation.
No, but revolution, you said.
Yeah,
a revolution is to revolve a circle.
Yeah.
What is what do you mean? That it always comes back to the same thing?
A new beginning. It means a new beginning. You go back to the beginning, and then you start the next phase.
Okay.
Yeah.
So revelation is to reveal.
To reveal, yeah. And that's why I'm sure they even created the term revelation.
And revelation reveals their plan.
In mystical language.
In mystical language.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christians are taught to believe it is the prophecy of the time to come. It is God's plan.
That's right.
Yeah. Paul Allen.
And it's been drummed into people.
Oh, yes.
And people forget, you know, that revelations wasn't taught in Christianity for hundreds of years.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it wasn't until they decided, it would become handy that they put it in there. And,
so are you saying the book of Revelations was added later?
Yes. When they got together at Nicaea, they also debated what books or writings would be put in and what ones would be left out.
Yes, and every time they had a new council, they made changes.
Yeah.
But wasn't it under the Second Council of Constantinople under Justinian, where they had taken so many of the writings out and all of the references to reincarnation?
Yeah, that was done then, because
that's
still the traditional belief of mainstream Judaism, is reincarnation. And of course, non-Jews are totally ignorant of that fact. That's always been the inner belief of the average, you know.
Well, the ancient Eastern religions too.
Well, for all the way from Egypt.
Yes.
Didn't
you say that has now been admitted, and it was fairly recently Vatican had apologized?
Yeah. Yeah,
Boy.
They did. They did admit it in one of their own publications.
And you said there's a Vatican website?
Yeah, I know they also have their own radio.
Yeah, but I'd like to see if there is a publication.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you hear that?
It was on the Catholic radio.
I see.
Is it WEWN, I think they call it, or something?
Okay.
But, they're always revising things, you see. And, of course, the Catholic Church now is in the process, really, and has been for a while, of altering so much within Catholicism to bring it up for the New Age.
Yeah.
And we forget that the term the New Age was used first by Freemasons in the 1800s, and right up until about 1950 or 1960, that was the name of the main Freemasonic magazine, the New Age. That's where it comes from. Yeah.
And my wondering is, that is there an evolutionary process, so to speak, and I don't mean that like, you know, Darwin or something, but where that there is like each revolution, a revolution of the astrological wheel, when you go from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius, then that would be termed a new age. Every, what is it, 2,400 years or so?
Yeah, 25 and a half.
Okay, 25 and a half. Mm-hmm. So the word new age really doesn't mean anything evil.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, it appears to me, there's a book that I've got here, and I don't remember which one it was, but it was about the Knights Templar. And towards the end of the book, they were talking about the New Age, and it was so clear to me that what they have done is taken a natural occurrence, if you would, and just gain control of it and warp and twist anything that truth that could come out of it.
Well, the New Age to them is utopia. You see, you have to see it from their point of view as controllers, and from the ones who follow it. The followers never know what's going on. They think they do, but in fact they often are brainwashed into wanting it to come on.
Well, like
the controllers, it's their age of peace and tranquility, because they plan to alter man or humankind so much that no one will be able to cause trouble of any kind by having independent thought. And that's what they mean. They'll have perfect peace when everyone's chipped.
That's right.
cloned and all the rest of it.
No total absence of resistance to their plan.
Yeah, absolutely. When consciousness in the masses has been eliminated, individual consciousness, then they will have succeeded according to even that meeting they had at Loyola University 2 years ago with the geneticists, you know, funded by the U.S. government. And they talked about that once this chip is implanted, which they have, into the human brain, it will be the end of individual consciousness. Each person will be unable to perceive themselves as a distinct individual.
And that chip mm-hmm. actually has part of the human DNA in it.
It's a combination of silicone and human protoplasm.
So that it merges with the brain cells itself.
It literally will bind itself to the nervous tissue, right into the pathways to the brain.
And you said that they had said that they will hear the whisperings of the thoughts of so many other people
who are all linked to central computers.
Uh huh.
And I thought when I thought this is the Borg. This is the Borg of Star Trek. They showed us the Borg.
uh-huh.
But they plan on doing this, and they say that their only problem now is to convince the public to accept it. And they said all media, entertainment, cartoons, etc., will promote this as a positive thing. And sure enough, now there's movies out in science fiction like The Mosaic, a terrible movie. But, you know, two dumb guys who are pretty, probably left school at 15, going nowhere, get chipped and can speak 20 languages, no kung fu, karate, etc., and become super spies.
So, you know. Yeah.
They're already doing it. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
the U.S. Department of Commerce sponsored and paid for that world meeting.
So that's not surprising, is it, Alan?
No, because
and you know
we
the
are
sad,
the commerce.
Yeah, and the sad thing, and we're out of our hour, the sad thing is that if you try to explain to a parent why cartoons mm-hmm. are so dangerous, it's almost impossible to do.
That's true.
It just doesn't sink in because it keeps the children occupied.
Mm-hmm.
We're out of time. Alan, thank you so much.
That's a pleasure.
For being here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back with you on Monday night. I hope you will come back with us. And I hope you have a lovely 4 days until next Monday. And we will see you then. God bless you, folks. Please do remember, this broadcast is listener sponsored. And I hope that you will join us. Good night. Good night, Alan.
Good night.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
In America, we value our liberty.